B-Pod Studios.
The following podcast is PG, may contain sketchy advice, embarrassing anecdotes, and may not be suitable for parents who think they have their shit together.
This is PG with Roxanne Wilder.
Dr. Mike Jordan, what's going on?
Not much, Roxanne. It's good to talk to you. How are you?
Doing great. Okay, I have to address this the same way that anytime I talk to someone, I meet someone for the first time. Not that I'm meeting you for the first time, but Roxanne, everybody else has to sing the Police song.
Yes.
So we just need to get this out of the way. It's no biggie to me because I've known you since elementary school, but it is a novelty for a lot of people who meet you and they're like, or they see they're going to go see the doctor, Dr. Michael Jordan. They're like, ooh, is this a post-career for MJ? No, yes. This is... You're the real Michael Jordan.
That's right. Close to that, or something was wrong with their TV set or something.
But seriously, you do probably get asked that.
Yeah.
When you meet someone for the first time, always. It's just...
Yeah, that's...
Everyone tries to be cutesy.
That's always been a bit of a challenge, ever actually since we were back at Palm Harbor Middle School. And that's about when he started becoming popular and his shoes came out. and so, you know, that's kind of goes with the territory. So anytime I pull out my credit card or... The funniest story for that was when I was graduating from Florida. It just happened to be that Emmett Smith had come back and was graduating, and he graduated in the morning session.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember, like, when they call your name to go across stage, I mean, they don't have a list. You had to write your name down on a card.
Right.
And so I debated, because I always go by Mike.
Sure.
You know? And that was, like, before Michael Jordan, but that really kind of... It's amazing how much that throws people off just a little if you go by Mike.
Right, but, it does. But, yes, true.
But at any rate, I'd always gone by that. And so, you know, there's this debate. Should I put my real name down? You know, it's form. I'm graduating from college. And, you know, so I wrote down. I decided to go ahead and write down Michael Jordan. And I gave the card to the guy. And he looked at me. And he just rolled his eyes and shook his head like I was making my name up. And then, of course, I walk across the stage. And, you know, I'm not Michael Jordan that they're expecting. And the O'Connell Center just starts laughing. So, that was certainly took a little of the sheen off my shiny moment.
Oh, I love that story. Well, you're the only Michael Jordan to me.
Well, that's very nice.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes. So, okay. So we have so much fun stuff to get into. And I do want to let everybody know that you're also, along with being a longtime friend, my daughter's pediatrician. I always talk about you on the podcast.
Yeah, that's me.
So here you are. And so first thing we probably ought to address is, what do you do about patients, or I should say parents of patients, who incessantly blow up your phone with, hey, my daughter has this rash right here. What does that look like to you?
That happens from time to time, and I think you just have to be patient and then understand. Certainly with first-time moms, that can always, you know, every little thing is a bit of a crisis sometimes. Some people kind of take it in stride and move on. Anytime there's a new experience and all of a sudden you're in a situation where you have a new person you're responsible for and everything isn't going according to what you're expecting, there's a certain amount of anxiety that is generated, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And so you just have to be cognizant of that and understand, hey, okay, this looks all right. And, you know, things that I see all the time that don't excite me as far as making me nervous or concerned,
mm-hmm.
is different than something a first-time person or mom or
right.
parent sees, you know.
Right.
And so the certain rashes that babies get that, you know, I can look at and immediately know that this is a non-issue. You know, if you see it for the first time, you think, oh, this looks like something very serious, or this is a problem, or what do we do? And then you're kind of sitting on pins and needles, and do I go to the ER, do I do this, or do I do that? I mean, it's kind of part of the job, so that's what we do. So we not only treat infants and children, but sometimes we have to treat the parents as well.
Mm-hmm. You totally understand the mindset. It's funny because I had a dermatologist in studio the other day, and I said, I want to ask her about what's on my daughter's face, and I know you and I had texted about it was a spider angioma. So I'm looking back through all of our old text messages, and I'm just mortified. I'm like, I can't believe I text Mike about this. In any case, but that brings me to my next question. I want to know why you decided to go into pediatrics. I know this is something you've wanted to do forever,
sure.
But it really is. I until being a parent. You have a lot of pressure, Mike. These kids are, you know, the parents are looking to you for everything when it comes to their health, their most prized possessions.
Yeah.
So a lot of pressure.
Yeah, they're coming to you, and I think you have to take that responsibility very seriously that this is, I mean, people aren't going to take time out of their day to come to you because they feel like wasting your time, even though sometimes things may, like we say, seem to be trivial to someone who does this every day and knows is a certain expert in certain areas. For other people, it's something that is a big concern, or they have issues that they need outside of the room where we're examining the patient, where, you know, they have to work, have pressures about they need to get to work, they need to provide for their family, and issues that can sometimes be frustrating for them, such as, you know, daycares being sometimes a little too stringent on whether or not kids can come or not, or, you know, and they have to take off work. You know, so you kind of have to take all that into consideration when you're seeing children. By and large, most kids get over things that they have. You know, they get viral infections, and they're pretty routine.
Resilient.
You know, and so you have to, and resilient, and they're always, you know, even a lot of times they're smiling and happy, and they're sick, but you have to be able to make sure that you can tease out the kid that's really sick, because those are the ones that you have to be worried about.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes we approach things differently because we're always thinking like a worst case scenario. Okay, what
sure.
is this? You know, there's always a fine line, and there's no kind of right answer. It kind of becomes the difference between the science of medicine and the art of medicine of understanding what kind of decisions you have to make, you know?
Mm-hmm. And that's a great explanation. It's like you have to have that intuition, and it comes from your depth of experience and what you've seen over your whole career to be able to pinpoint, okay, this child needs to go to the hospital.
Right.
This is not that big of a deal. So right. Why did you want to become a pediatrician? Like I said, this has been your dream as long as I've known you.
Well, I think, you know, it just is something that you, the personality of who I am, you know, I certainly have a, you know,
kid at heart.
Yeah, and a kid at heart for sure. You know, I certainly have, you know, certain things that, you know, I'm a huge Star Wars fan. I like football, you know, I mean, this is the kind of stuff that can relate to kids
right.
You know, and I, you know, I really enjoy going into a room, and especially if they're not feeling too good, and making kids laugh or trying to enjoy an experience that can sometimes be unpleasant. That is something that I've always enjoyed doing. And then, you know, you go through training and you have an idea, okay, well, this is what I want to do, but you've never actually really done it. And then when you go through training, it becomes really apparent what you like and what you don't like. You know, I don't think I really went in to med school with a significant bias that, hey, this is what I want to do. I wanted to have an open mind. But when you start going through rotations and you're taking care of, you know, you're on an internal medicine rotation where you're in the hospital taking care of older patients, or you're in the pediatric ward, or you're in rotating through OBGYN, you know, you certainly see things that interest you, and you can tell, yeah, this is what I'm like. And then also there's a kind of a personality of, you know, pediatricians are all kind of the same, and people that go into certain subspecialties all tend to have kind of the same type of personality, and that fits who they are, and then the job fits what they like to do, and it just kind of sorts itself out for the most part.
You said when you started to specialize, you said, I found my people. This just reaffirmed everything I thought. Sure.
Yeah, I was pretty sure. You know, I had grown up, you know, doing various things where I was working with children, either like teaching swim lessons or being a lifeguard. And so I was around them, and I kind of developed an easy way. It was easy for me to kind of get through to them, and it just kind of carried on throughout that process. And once I was there doing it, I was like, yeah, this is right. I think this is what I feel excited about doing, and this seems to be calling me to come into this direction. So I just was lucky enough to kind of think that was where I wanted to be, and it ended up being the right choice for me, and I just made it, and the rest is history, I guess.
So one thing you made a big impression on me with, and we could do a whole podcast about this, but when you and I first started talking about vaccinations, and, you know, it being in the media, we get a lot of stories that come our way, and it's just awful. You have a parent that says, I think this happened to my child because of a vaccination, so you get the anti-vaccine sort of mindset. And now we've shifted in our society, I believe, because of, unfortunately, the measles and Hep A, these different outbreaks that we've been seeing. But it became crystal clear for me when you and I talked about it. I love what you said, comparing the risk related to a vaccine versus and what you've seen in practice.
Sure. Yeah, I think, you know, coming from my background and seeing, you know, I mean, this is what I do every day. You know, and this is what I see, and this is who I've treated. So I have a lot of experience with these things. You know, certainly I think in society a bit of a breakdown between the trust of your physician and a trust with the family, and then all these other outside sources of, you know, what information are you going to use when you're making a decision about what we already talked about is your most precious commodity, the most valuable thing in your life, which is your child. And I think all of this comes from a point of where parents want to do what's best, and it becomes a challenge sometimes when all these different voices are convincing or very, you know, they're very authoritative about, well, you shouldn't do this because mm-hmm. this happened to me. And sometimes, you know, as physicians, you have to remember, you know, anecdotes are not evidence. That's just an anecdote. In other words, mm-hmm. you know, just because something happened and that maybe there was a temporal relationship between someone, you know, having a vaccine and then something happening doesn't necessarily mean the vaccine caused it. Like, we see this all the time. You know, I mean, I must have had three or four parents yesterday tell me, well, he's been teething, so I know he's had a fever because of that. You know, that is an old wives' tale that's been passed down, but teething doesn't cause fevers, right? You know, I mean, mm-hmm. teething causes teeth, you know, and babies get fevers, you know, and sometimes they get them at the same time. It doesn't mean that they're
correlated, right?
You know, and so I try and talk with my families and let them know, look, you got to, when you come here, you're coming to our office, I think, for a reason. You trust what we're saying, mm-hmm. you know, so then you have to weigh that trust. You know, does the value of what I'm saying to you, does that carry more weight than, say, what your aunt says or your mm-hmm. neighbor says? Sometimes we're, you know, they're like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. And sometimes it doesn't. So, you know, you just have to kind of work with them to get your point of view across, answer their questions.
We've eradicated certain deadly diseases with vaccines. And
yeah.
you, I mean, as sad as it is to say this, you've seen children who haven't been vaccinated for XYZ die.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's it. I mean, and that's the saddest thing is that we have, I think the last figure I read, we have 1,077 kids with measles this year,
mm-hmm.
you know, and in the year 2000, we had zero,
right?
And then prior to the measles vaccine, we would have 500,000 children a year would get the measles. They get serious complications from that, and mm-hmm. it's not necessarily the measles, but the secondary infections like pneumonia, other things that can cause problems, hospitalizations, and even death. For one person to have a complication or become seriously injured or die because of something that we could prevent, you know, it's
frustrating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very frustrating when we have something that's there and there's so much misinformation that's populated by people who are not informed.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Kind of a general question along those lines, though. What would you like parents to think about more? Maybe they come in, they're worried about XYZ, and you're like, no. Those aren't the things you need to be worried about. As a parent, I'd rather you be focused on these factors, these things in your child's life.
Yeah, just with the vaccines. I mean, they shouldn't be worried about side effects or the certain alleged type of problems you can get with vaccines. They need to be worried about the illnesses.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the thing, you know, because you can see as soon as people start dropping their vaccine rates down, then measles pops up. And I mean, it's very predictable and it's very easily predict that this would happen, you know,
right.
As soon as those vaccine levels drop. And now all of a sudden you see parents are coming in, well, I want to get the vaccine now.
Mm-hmm.
And the kids, because the problem with the measles vaccine is that you have to give that after the child's a year of age because the way the vaccine works, maternal antibodies can destroy it and not make it not effective before they're a year old.
Oh, I see.
Okay. But you can't, but because you have maternal antibodies passed on to the newborn,
mm-hmm.
they're there to help fight infections, you know, and then all of a sudden as they start to wane, then you can give the vaccine. But if you give the vaccine before that, there's a chance that it won't be as effective. And it's not like you can't get the vaccine before because it would harm the child or it's too potent. It's the fact that it wouldn't work right.
I understand.
And so we do have parents who are like, and this is one of the reasons why we want to make sure we have all our patients vaccinated because, you know, I'm not going to have to go into the hospital and explain to my family of a 9-month-old, well, your child got measles because I have this lax vaccine policy
mm-hmm.
and you were here 2 hours after one of my kids came in that doesn't get vaccinated and they've spread the measles. And,
right.
you know, that's one of the most contagious illnesses that we have out there. You know, we want to make sure that we have people up to date. And so anyways, like to answer your question, I think there's a lot of things that people focus on that are more rumors or, you know, not just factually untrue. And they're worried about that. And they're not worried about the real issues, you know, and they're worried about the boogeyman instead of the serial killer.
You know, there you go.
You know, so it becomes a little bit of a challenge to try and unwind some of that.
Mm-hmm. What kind of nutritional advice do you give parents? Because I know we can read a lot of studies and see the childhood obesity. We have an epidemic.
Sure.
And I know even with my daughter, I mean, I kind of pat myself on the back because she eats a lot. She eats a lot of different varieties of food. So we know she's getting her nutrients. On the other hand, everywhere I turn, we have these snacks for, and I'm like, oh, that's processed. That has sugar in it. You can't escape sugar. And
yeah.
some of the stuff that actually, you know, encourages obesity.
Yeah, it is. It's a bit of a challenge, I think, for sure. And, You know, but basically, I try and keep things simple. I mean, that makes the easiest, most sense to me is, you know, if you keep things simple, you can, you have a better chance of kind of following through with it. So I'd always have a discussion with parents, you know, when they're starting to feed their kids and as they're coming in and we're checking them for their yearly checkups and we monitor their weight and their growth and their body mass index. You know, I think they need to focus on eating healthy foods, you know, and I think I need to empower the parents to try and remember that their job is to purchase food and it's their job to prepare food and it's the kid's job to eat it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, as simple as that sounds, that's really what it boils down to. And so if your child is only eats junk food, well, I mean, some of it is you're only providing junk food. And some of that could be, well, that's the only food that they have available. Or some of it is that it's just that they are, you know, I think sometimes we see parents that are, well, they're afraid. Well, he'll go to bed hungry or, you know, he won't, you know, he will be grumpy if he doesn't get a meal in. So I just need to get him something. And I think you need to kind of remember to focus on, I mean, it's really just common sense. You need to try and shoot for five different types of fruits and vegetables every day, and you want to stay away from fried foods like chicken nuggets and french fries and potato chips.
Which, by the way, I learned as a new mom, I never realized this, it doesn't matter what restaurant you go to, the menu is always the same for kids' menu. It's always chicken nuggets, pizza, and a hamburger, and mac and cheese, and that's it.
Yeah, and, you know, that's kind of like what kids like, and it tastes great and that sort of thing, and so... You know, and kids are smart. They know, hey, listen, if I hold out on the broccoli, you know,
right.
I'm going to get the mac and cheese. So guess how much broccoli I'm eating right now? Zero, you know. You know, and so you have to kind of say, okay, hey, this is what's for dinner. And I always tell parents, you know, you just need to provide the food. And then their choice is to eat it or not eat it.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually they're going to figure out if you're only giving them this food, they'll be hungry enough that they'll eat it. And
right.
By and large, most of the time, and there are obviously some exceptions, but generally, I simplify it, but that's basically what it boils down to. You just have to kind of have enough confidence in your parenting skills to know, hey, this is what's right. I need to make sure that this is the food that the child eats, and I know what's healthy, and provide that for them, and then they'll eat it, you know?
Absolutely. All right, Dr. Mike Jordan, I didn't even get through half my topics that I wanted to ask you about, so I promise I won't text all those questions to you. We can do this again if you want to at some point. I'd love to. So,
yeah, anytime. Let me know.
Yeah, thanks for... And what's your website?
Oh, it's EastLakePediatrics, all one word, .com, www.eastlakepediatrics.com.
All right.
You can find us on Facebook, too.
We'll check you out. Thanks so much.
All right, Roxanne, take care.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.